You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Broken records, the albums you wouldn't shut up about. Broken records, the music our guests can't live without.
Like Judy,
Barbara,
Liza,
Bette,
Betty,
Audra,
Bernadette.
We broadcast this podcast with hopes that someday we might get Patti LuPone. Broken record, broken record, broken record, broken record, broken record.
Welcome to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. I'm Ben Rimmelauer, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Daniel Nolan.
Hey, y'all. Today's guest is the author and star of Off-Broadway's newest hit, Happy Birthday, Doug's, Drew Drogi.
Drew is going to chat with us about Sylvester's album, All I Need.
The Queen.
Drew recently lit up stages in New York, L.A., and across the country, starring in his previous acclaimed solo play, Bright Colors and Bold Patterns, now streaming on Prime Video's Broadway HD channel.
I love that show so much.
Me too. I saw it three times with Drew and with Jeff Hiller, who replaced him.
Me too.
And you know, folks, if anyone's looking for another replacement in Bright Colors and Bold Patterns...
call Carolee Carmello.
Hey!
JK, JK, you'd be hilarious.
Thank you. Drew first became a pop culture fixture about 10 years ago with his long-running series of obsession-worthy YouTube videos as Chloe Sevigny.
You mean Chloe Sevigny?
Is it Chloe?
Chloe Sevigny.
Chloe Sevigny.
Sevigny. Wingardium Leviosa.
That's all she said.
That's all she wrote. You know, we have to say that Drew's little catchphrases that he's coined as Chloe, we say all the time, especially in the summer in Fire Island. We always say sandwich. I'm going to make a sandwich.
I didn't even remember that was his anymore. Become such a part. It's like Kleenex.
Yeah. Xerox. What's the other one I love? Grand Parents. Toast.
Yeah. Oh my God. Toast.
I
want to
make some toast.
I mean, he is so iconic.
And I told him this on the interview, but I cannot tell you how many nights I've been at Brooklyn House parties.
The interview that we're about to do in the future.
Yes.
That we definitely did not
already
2 weeks
do.
Ago, no.
So many nights winding down in, you know, Brooklyn House parties across the borough. YouTube comes on, the Chloe videos come out.
Oh my God, totally.
We just watch them for hours.
For me, at the 89th Street at my friend Ken's house.
Mm-hmm.
When the scotch was all gone.
Pour the scotch out.
When you were waiting for the Coke guy to come.
Yeah.
Oh, 4 in the morning. And you needed something to attach your, like, needy soul to. That was...
Enter Chloe.
That was home.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know.
When I think of home.
That was the original Friends on Netflix.
Totally. Netflix and chill. Chloe and Coke.
I was thinking about Drew last night because I saw Charles Bush's fabulous play.
Of course,
of
course.
Dare.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, Drew would actually be really good in this.
Well, hasn't he done Charles'
I know,
plays?
Then I immediately had the thought of like, hasn't he done Charles'
yeah.
plays? He has.
Yeah.
And to great success in L.A.
Sure. I mean, I think Drew...
But I guess in my fantasy, instead of Jeff Hiller replacing him in Happy Birthday, Doug, I would replace him. And
he would replace
Charles.
Mm.
And Charles could replace...
Yeah.
Whichever part Nathan Lee Grant
yeah.
doesn't
and
take.
And then I could replace...
La Rouge or... what was it?
Totally.
I guess Charles can't do...
Mame?
I didn't mean Mame, but Charles can do Mame. Charles has done Mame. Did you know that?
Yeah, and Nathan Kavira. And then I could replace you in...
Patty Issues. You're a little Gentile for that role.
Well, okay, maybe better with money, though.
Yeah, you could be good as a hooker.
Thank you.
Hooker the heart of dust.
I appreciate that.
The funniest line in Confession of Lily Dare,
uh-huh.
where he's like, there's always work for a pianist who does ragtime and a hooker who does anal.
Oh!
I'm getting it wrong, literally.
Well, I mean, I follow many a boy on Twitter who can do both, so.
Well, why would you follow them if they couldn't?
So you saw Lily Dare last night, and you texted me, first of all, someone had a ticket that you offered me, and I couldn't go because I already had plans. But you texted me and said...
I want to go back and see it again, though. You should come.
Yeah,
go
I totally
back.
Want to.
I loved it so much.
But you texted me and said, oh my God, you'll never guess who I saw.
Oh my God, I freaked out. I have never been so starstruck in my life.
Yes,
I'm standing outside the Cherry Lane Theater in the cold, waiting to get my tickets. I like that I just said theater.
The theater?
I never say theater.
So,
that's very
someone.
Like, nothing's gonna harm you.
Yeah.
I'm a musical theater major.
Sutton.
No, not Sutton.
Theater. I feel like she's very.
Is
like,
she? I don't think of her that way.
Theater. I don't know. Go on.
I'm not trying to defend her, you understand?
You've been awfully defensive of Sutton lately.
Well, I really liked what she wore to the Jerry Herman Memorial. Mm-hmm. How can you hate a woman who wears that outfit?
It's true. It's true.
Anyway,
go on.
So, I'm standing outside the Cherry Lane Theater in the cold, waiting to get our tickets and go inside.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just this narrow little street. It's very old New York, you know.
Old New York.
Carrie Bradshaw, like, you know, wore a tutu there.
Totally.
And
that guy walked naked down the street.
Yes. And this big SUV pulls up.
Mm-hmm.
And this attractive Jewish woman, early 30s,
mm-hmm.
gets out of the back seat with a really cute fur hat. So
mm-hmm.
I notice her, and I'm like, I know her face. That's Sophie Von Hasselberg, Bette Midler's daughter.
Yes.
And, oh, I wish that Bette were with her. That'd be so exciting. Who is that older man getting out the other side of the car? And then I knew. And can I tell you, I've never been so starstruck in my life.
Yeah.
And they got in line right behind us.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I just felt...
Was that talking? Could you hear her saying stuff?
Well, she had one line that I must tell you. But, no, she was very quiet, and Sophie seemed to be talking, and Bette seemed to be nodding or, like, texting her or something.
Yeah.
And I felt really awkward because I could tell that Bette didn't want anyone, least of all me, to do anything. But I was like, shouldn't we all let her go to the front of the line and
right.
also
applause.
Kill ourselves?
Yeah,
like, how can we just stand here in line? And, like, you know... And, I mean, are we supposed to just go about our usual conversation about, like, I don't know,
what,
like, world peace or the election
what
or Charles Bush?
About,
I mean,
yeah.
there's only Bette Midler,
right,
you know?
Right.
But I said to my friend, I mean, shouldn't we let her go ahead? And he said, she's got a fur hat, which was a good point. It was very cold.
Yeah.
But I wasn't comfortable with it. But I also felt that, like, my version of being like, excuse me, Miss Midler.
Yeah. It'd be an honor if
for
you
Hello Dolly alone, please. May I? And I feel like she'd be like, while you're talking, you missed your space and we're
yeah.
all later.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
so I was just like, nose to the grindstone.
Don't.
Oh, and just then, it was a whole situation. It's not worth going into, but somebody came up and said I could use my digital tickets, which they originally said we couldn't use, so we actually left the line. So we go in and we sit down. And so, of course, like, I have now ripped my seat out of the bolts into the floor so that I can turn it completely facing the back of the house and make sure I don't miss Bette coming down
the
aisle.
No, that's a show.
So I'm waiting. I'm watching Bette come down the aisle and Bette and Sophie, who, by the way, I mean, I don't know if it's just because she's Bette Midler's daughter, but I felt that I had a soul connection with Sophie.
Mm.
We didn't speak and she never seemed to notice I was there, but I felt that our hearts were as one.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
what
yeah.
have I been doing? Wasting my time having other friends doing this podcast
yeah.
with you.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
All the time that I could have been
with Sophie.
Sophie,
your BFF. Truly.
Like, I mean, because if I was best friends with Sophie, what's the worst that would happen? Like, Bette would hate me. She would still know me.
You
as
get
opposed
another,
to now
yeah.
when, like, the, like, digital e-ticket person said to me, oh, you guys can actually go. Just tell me your name.
Yeah.
And I said, as close to Bette as you are to me, Ben Rimmelauer.
R.I.M.
And just, you know, so many times in my life when I say my name out loud in front of strangers, sometimes even celebrities, they will stop and be like, Rimmelauer. Usually it's like older gay men of a certain generation.
So bad.
You know, making sexual comments, you know. Or sometimes someone will even be like Kathleen Najimy being like, shut up. That's not your real voice.
Right.
So I was like, you never know. Maybe Bette will have some comment on my voice or my name.
Sure.
She had no comment. But
no
so
notes.
I'm waiting in the house. Watching them come down the aisle, having my spiritual connection
mm-hmm.
with Sophie Von Hasselberg. And they don't get past our row.
Oh, no.
And I'm thinking, oh, my God. Now, I already knew they weren't going to sit next
was
to us.
Was anyone stopping
the seats,
them and, like, bothering
well,
them?
Well, this is when it happened. The seats next to us were filled. But someone comes up and talks to Sophie that she either knows or is pretending to know.
Right.
And so they're having this long conversation, and Bette is sitting there, like, being on a scale of, like, 1 to 10, like, 10 being, like, polite, pretending to care about your friend or, like, daughter's conversation with their friend, 1 being, like, disinterested. She was definitely a 0. And, like, at one point, Bette actually, like, leans into Sophie and goes, "Keep talking." And then turns and goes to their seats by herself. And I spent the rest of the night, I would say 30% watching the play.
Right.
70% analyzing, was that a guilt trip?
Yeah.
Was that Bette's version of being
Jewish,
nice?
Jewish mother.
Was she, like, I couldn't decide if Bette preferred Sophie to come to the seat with her, but wanted Sophie to enjoy herself.
Well,
or,
how did she say it?
What, or she truly didn't care, but was just letting Sophie know, like...
I bet that was it. I bet she was like, "Keep talking, I'm going to go to the seat."
I don't know. It was so layered. It's so clear that Bette is so smart, and Sophie's so smart,
yeah.
And their relationship is so intelligent.
Mm.
I felt like I had no more ability to understand the nuances of that conversation than, like, the dead mouse in my apartment knew what version of Barbara Cook I was going to listen to in bed
right,
that night.
Right, right, right.
Like, sure, I might know what words mean, but,
right.
Like, I'm just a mere...
Mm.
I never played the Continental Baths.
So, did that seem to like the show?
Yes.
Okay, good.
And I was desperately trying to watch her, but I
right.
couldn't because she's
right.
very short.
Right.
So I was instead just... trying to, like, watch
Sophie.
What
was she wearing? Was she wearing, like, a black something?
Bette had a black down parka.
Okay,
I would say,
thing.
Like, just below butt level. Like,
okay.
Not very long.
Uh-huh.
Sophie was wearing a longer parka, as was I.
just another, chalk it up to another soul connection.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Sophie actually had a little bit of, like, a Molly Pope on Prozac quality.
So Molly Pope.
Let me, like, Molly Pope on enough Prozac. Just, like, pretty in that Molly Pope, sort of, like, almost, like, Jewish Laura Linney way. Not
ooh,
that Molly Pope's
yeah.
Jewish, but, like...
But, yeah.
But, like, Bette Midler's Jewish enough for all of us.
Right, right.
Probably not Jewish.
Yeah, Sophie
enough
is
for,
very, very pretty.
Anyway, so Bette was wearing that, and I guess some kind of, like, pants, like, I want... Maybe even, like, navy, like... pants like I'm wearing are black,
mm.
but like kind of just like nondescript,
yeah.
like skinny, but not ridiculously tight.
Right.
And she had a leopard cap on.
A la Fanny Bryce.
But Sophie had like a big fur hat.
Mm.
Bette's hat was somewhere between like a 1920s, like, girl's hat
mm-hmm.
and like a bathing cap.
Mm, interesting.
It was not fur. It seemed more expensive.
There
than
was no
felt.
There was no brim.
If there was a brim, it protruded less far than the natural curve of her head. No, there was no brim.
Okay.
It was almost like a turban, except not a turban.
Okay.
But it did seem to be cut exactly to her hairline.
Okay.
Like, you could tell that she had hair.
I'm so interested, because we all know Bette wears a lot of wigs, and her hair is always very short. Kind of like the Glenn Close journey.
You don't have to. There's no reason.
So that's fascinating. That's fascinating that Bette, you know, she's not wearing a wig, she's wearing a hat that very clearly hides her.
I mean, it was very much like... I know Charles Bush.
Uh-huh.
I saw Vampire Lesbians of Sodom when they were still bi until graduation. Or, I don't know.
I like that.
But she wasn't, like, coming here for, like, a glamorous photo op.
Right.
Maybe they took pictures. I forgot to look at Charles's mm-hmm. stuff.
Oh,
I know
yeah.
they had a private audience afterwards. But she definitely wasn't, like, dressed for the theater.
Right, right.
You know, Glenn Close probably would have had all kinds of crap on.
Right, right, sure.
You know, Patty would have worn her glasses. You
right,
know?
Right.
But that was, like, not dressed up. But, like, I did enjoy her conversation with Sophie before the show, talking about a subject another connection between Sophie and myself. I had been talking about earlier that day. Oh, I'm totally tagging Sophie in this. Maybe she'll follow back.
Yes.
We should have her on the pod.
Yes. Oh, my God. What a fun guest.
But she was talking about the fact that that restaurant that was recently, well, I think its most recent incarnation I didn't even go to, but it used to be my favorite restaurant. It was called Commerce, right there on Commerce Street, like diagonally from the Cherry Lane.
Okay.
And that's been closed for like 4 or 5 years. I love that restaurant so much. And then back in the day, it was a place called Grange Hall that I also really liked. Mm. And now it's like all shuttered. But, you know, like boarded up with shutters. I mean, although it did shutter. But anyway, she was talking about that. And I was enjoying the fact that she had the same conversation I did. Anyway, I was watching Sophie to watch Bette during the show because I couldn't watch Bette. So I tried to gauge Bette via Sophie's reactions, which was hard to do. Sophie seemed to enjoy it. But then I realized I could hear Bette's cackle and she laughed a lot.
No.
She really enjoyed it. So that was like very enjoyable.
That is amazing.
Then they had an audience with Bette after the show, and anyway, the show was really fabulous, and Charles is just so freaking wonderful.
Yeah, we'll have to get him on here.
And so is Nancy Anderson, Howard McGillin, mm-hmm. and this wonderful woman, Jennifer Van Dyke, I think is how she says it. The whole cast, now I can't remember the two guys' names, but they were, the other two other guys' names, but they were fabulous, too.
How long was it? Was it like a... intermission,
two acts with an intermission, but it really goes by quickly. It's so enjoyable, and like as you know, I'm not somebody that's like into old movies.
Sure,
I don't like get off on like old movie parodies.
Uh-huh.
But this really just made me laugh so hard, and
this is a new play.
Yeah, it's new. Bette news of the week. Hello, bury the lead.
Oh my God,
that Goldie and Diane.
Oh, fuck, yes. Okay, so what's it called? Family Jewels? Which
yes.
Already, I'm on board.
I am so on board.
On board.
Yes, in the range of how good or not good this movie could be, the worst it could possibly be, it will be my favorite movie of the 21st century.
Totally. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, even though that movie...
Book Club. But I'm sorry. Don't give me... I mean, Mary Steenburgen and Candace Bergen,
right.
God love them.
God
they
love
have
them.
A right to exist.
God love them.
But they ain't my Diane and Goldie.
They're a Tuesday Diane and Goldie. I mean,
yeah. Or Bette, for God's sake.
I mean, Bette, Goldie, and Diane in a movie together. First of all, just the hype surrounding it will be magical to experience in a live theater. And...
did you happen to notice that Bette is producing again, like she did with The First Wives?
I didn't know she produced that.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. That's a story I'm fascinated by.
A Bette concert that I was really into in college, Diva Las Vegas.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
That's the one where she sings, "Everything's Coming Up Grosses for Me, So Fuck You."
Oh.
The line that goes right before that is First Wives Club, 100 million.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm so fascinated by that. If I was a writer, and maybe I'll...
You are a writer.
Oh, thank you. If I was a writer of
books... literally
books,
sat here 24 hours ago and read your new play.
Right. But if I was a writer of
don't piss on my shoe.
You know, if I wrote books, which maybe I'll, you know, find a way to fake it, but I would love to write, like, a tell-all behind-the-scenes, account of the making of The First Wives Club, just because... I've heard there was so much turmoil and drama back
then. I didn't even know that.
You know, Paul Rudnick and Bette.
Wait, did Paul Rudnick write that movie? No.
No, but he wrote a lot of the best lines, I think. He was like a script doctor for it.
Oh, wait.
I mean,
I'll
fact check this. But
do it.
Yeah. And, you know, there was, there's just so many ladies that are all mostly still alive. I mean, Stockard, Maggie, Sarah Jessica, Elizabeth.
Berkeley.
And
Victor Garber.
Not to mention
who are the daughters? Were they people?
Well, I guess Eileen is.
Well, I'm available. You know that.
Annie. Why don't you write each of them a nice note? Maybe send a hanging plant. Just a suggestion. But yeah, I'm so fascinated by that. And there's never really been that's such a. An important movie for so many, especially of my gen, because that was like right as we were,
as
the millennial gays were coming into their own.
My gen as well. I mean, I know people older don't consider it like a classic the way we do, but like it was 1996, the fall. I was directing the musical Ruthless in college, and I was very into the like diva thing.
Sure.
And I mean, it was the very fall that Betty Buckley's Carnegie Hall concert came out, so. What more is there to
exactly.
say? But there was a number in Ruthless, the title song that's sung by the three leads.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being so inspired by You Don't Own Me in First Wives Club.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, oh, God. I mean, I think I saw that movie in the theater a couple of times, which in my college years was rare that
right,
I do
right.
that, you know.
I don't know if I've told this on the pod before, but I was so obsessed with that movie. I remember renting it from the video store. I didn't see it in theaters. And then I watched it twice in a row.
Mm.
And I was like, I think in second or third grade. And that next couple months or whatever, I was so obsessed with that. I got the cassette soundtrack. I listened to it on my Walkman.
Soundtrack?
Yeah.
The only song I remember besides You Don't Know Me is didn't Billy Porter record a pop song? I remember him singing it on, on The View or maybe on Rosie O'Donnell.
I'll get over you. Love will find me again.
We should have Billy on the pod.
Yeah.
That'd be so good for his career.
Yeah, he needs this. Anyway, so, but that, you know, fall or whatever, we had a church talent show, and I was like,
oh, I do know
I was
this.
Like, Mom,
so you've not told this on the pod.
I was like, Mom, you know what?
I'm gay.
And also,
I'm a lesbian. A big one.
And then my friend Ryan, also, we were obsessed with Hocus Pocus, and then First Wives Club, and then Bette, of course. And so we were like, Mom, we want to dress up as, we didn't even know what drag meant, of course, but we were like, we want to dress up as Bette and Goldie and perform You Don't Own Me in white outfits for the church talent show. And for some reason, my mom and Ryan's mom said yes, and they allowed us to, even though my dad was the pastor of the church where said show was taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, look, we recently, when I was home last Christmas, we watched footage of the concert, and it was fabulous. Like,
I want to see it.
Yeah, I'll show it to you. I have it
on my phone.
You should
put this on the channel.
Yeah, the channel. and I really knew how to work a crowd at that age.
We should upload that, and then we should do a Broken Records YouTube playlist and invite people to partake in it.
Wait, what do you mean? Like music? Just music? Or like videos?
No, like videos. Mm. Like the Broken Records, like, you know, maybe like
great.
One, we'll add one every week for the episode.
Oh, that's
to
really
coincide.
Great. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. And we can add, and then our guests can choose some.
Oh, you're just making it so many videos.
Well, no, I'm saying like if we make a playlist, it can be like, you know, we curate a list.
I feel like our guests are already like cracking under the pressure of choosing an album.
True, but you know, guests like, you know, Alison Frazier.
We can make
Alison,
it. We can have it in the conversation.
They'll have a lot of.
It doesn't have to be in advance.
Right, right. But I feel like a lot of our guests will enjoy that. You know.
Okay, Dolly concert kill.
Mm-hmm.
Bette, Goldie, Diane.
Oh, this is a good one. I mean, you already know who I'm killing. I mean, I love her to death, but
I don't know actually.
I have to kill Diane.
How was I to know? How are we ever to know?
I mean, obviously, I've seen Bette in concert and as Dolly, but
same.
I want her as Dolly all the time. Goldie, I want in concert, but I want her with Liza.
Interesting.
In like a Fosse-esque choreographed show. What about you?
Not the same at all.
Okay.
I want Goldie as Dolly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I want Diane in concert, and I want it circa Annie Hall.
Oh, that's
like,
a good idea.
Like, I
want to
see Diane
and
Rena Sweeney.
Seems like old times.
You know?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that's good. I like that.
And Bette, although I will say, I've heard that Bette is interested or possibly even in the works to do a one-woman show on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really
that
excited
is.
About that. And someone told me that the opening number was going to be Bette sitting on top of, there'd be like a Fiddler on the Roof house on the set.
Oh,
and she's
wonderful.
Sitting
on top that's just so Bette.
I really want that to happen in my lifetime.
Oh, God. I mean, well, it will definitely happen in your lifetime.
You don't know that. You don't know that.
Then how are we ever to know? But yeah, Bette's so good at singing. Like, I don't
acting, know. Comedy.
But I want, yeah, a one-woman show, though, I mean, she's done so many, you know, specials and concerts and stuff, but
the Broadway one needs to be different.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I think, I'm sure she knows that.
And it needs, I mean, I feel like there's so many opportunities for, like,
merchandising.
Oh, God, the merch. But, like, her really, it's almost like, not a cabaret thing, but, like, her, it's like an more intimate.
Totally.
There's not a huge, you know.
That's why I'm so excited. I mean, I've seen Bette at Madison Square Garden.
Same, yeah.
And I wasn't into it, TBH.
I liked it, but I wasn't nearly as into Bette then as I was now, so I wasn't
Same.
Fully appreciating
Actually,
that.
I was in a pretty deep Bette moment, because when I saw her there was the Divine Miss Millennium, and it was, like, shortly after.
Mine was For the Girls.
Mine was not long after First Wives Club.
Sure, yeah.
And I was really into the album Bathhouse Betty, which had just
so
come
good,
out
yeah.
at the time.
So good.
But I felt like it just, I wanted to be closer. Like, I wished I'd seen her at Radio City.
Yeah,
you know?
I was in the very nosebleed seats as well, But when I did see her, it was the day...
As opposed to Barbara,
mm-hmm.
who I find less exciting than Bette in these decades. But Barbara has a... Barbara's show is not supposed to be exciting in that way. It's
right.
more about,
it's
like,
more
indulgence.
Like, yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, seeing...
It's like seeing the Pope.
Totally, totally. Seeing Barbara, which I've seen her thrice, and... Yeah, it's very scripted. I mean, I'm sure Bette's is too, although Bette seems a little
At least Bette doesn't let you read along the banter on the Jumbotron.
Yeah.
It's so wonderful to be here during the...
Gay games.
Definitely not the same.
Okay, so we'll talk about this more, I guess, in the Gideon episode, but we just saw Little Shop, and I have to say... I really want, if there's some movie of Little Shop happening, which I'm sure there is eventually, first of all, I need Lady Gaga as Audrey yesterday, and then I really want Barbara to be Mrs. Mushnick.
You said that, and I humored you, but I don't support it.
Because think about it, it's like the flower shop, so it's already, like, on brand for her.
It is not on brand for her.
Barbara loves flowers. She basically
Little Shop
has
of Horrors
is
not like a Barbara Streisand vibe about flowers.
No, but it's like she could finally play, like, the Jewish mother, Mushnick and Son.
She did that in The Road Trip. What was it
and,
called?
And
Little
Meet
Fockers.
The Fockers.
Yeah.
But she could sing, and she'd be funny. It's a comic opportunity.
No, I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, you suggested Lainey Kazan, who I also think would
be... Well,
it
wouldn't be Lainey Kazan, but she would just be better. Barbara would, A, be bad, and B, never in a million years.
Never in a million years. Anyway, but...
Barbara's not like the great roles... Rose and Gypsy, Mame Dennis, Ms. Mushnick, the music person.
The music person. Professor Carol Hill. Death of a Salesperson.
Well,
okay, well, speaking...
Do we have any more fan write-in, Mary, Dolly Comes or Kills?
Yes, yes. Let's do one of those.
Yes, let's.
Okay, next submission is from Sam Durbin and on his... You know, continuing his categorized submissions, and it's gay legends.
Oh.
Specifically gay male legends. So here we have Harvey Fierstein,
mm-hmm.
Nathan Lane,
mm-hmm.
and Billy Porter.
Okay.
It's a good one.
This is a good one. Well, it's pretty easy, though, I have to say.
Okay.
I would choose Nathan as Dolly, Billy in concert, kill Harvey.
I would choose... Harvey as Dolly. Billy in concert, kill Nathan.
Okay, but I'm not putting in any additional songs.
No, might as well just cut one. I mean, but yeah.
Wait, you said Harvey is Dolly.
Yeah.
And then what?
Billy in concert, kill
Nathan.
Nathan. Yeah. Cliff's, I mean, I love Nathan, obviously, but.
What have you seen Nathan in on Broadway?
Well, I saw him in that recent play, Gary. Which,
oh, but that's different.
And I saw him, obviously, in Angels in America. I've seen him, like, the Birdcage, I guess, is, like, the closest
but
thing I've seen
you,
to, like...
When you, I mean, wait, now I'm like, what have I seen Nathan in? Wait, I've definitely seen Nathan
producers.
In a bunch of... Oh, yeah, I saw Nathan in The Producers. But I realized I didn't actually see Nathan in Guys and Dolls. But I saw him in The Producers, and I saw him in Love, Valor, Compassion.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Nathan on... And The Nance, which I loved.
Oh, The Nance.
Oh, and
absolutely.
I saw him in that play Butley that he was great in, but that
oh.
wasn't a comedy. But...
I love The Nance.
Oh, and it's only a play.
Mm-hmm.
Nathan in a comedy...
It's good.
It's... I don't...
I just want to see Harvey because of, like, the drag element.
But I kind of feel like seeing Harvey, and I don't mean this in a bad way,
mm-hmm.
but I don't mean it in a good way. Seeing Harvey do Dolly would be kind of like seeing, like, Ryan O'Connor do it, like, on mushrooms at, like, Gay Days Anaheim, which I did, and it was magical.
Magical, and I would go again.
But, like, I don't choose that over Nathan Lane on Broadway.
Right. Okay, I get that.
On Broadway.
On Broadway.
Okay, that was great. Now let's talk to Drew Drogi.
Let's be alive. Let's look alive. At being alive, that is one of the number one hit singles made famous by our musical guest today, the fabulous triple threat singer, belter, soprano, Drew Drogi.
We love to say Dean Jones.
Dean Jones.
Didn't Dean Jones do it originally?
Yes.
Yes, that's right.
I'm very proud of my ability to pull that out.
I believe you. So are you telling me now, by way of that, that you are not a big musical theater queen?
I am, but just by in very weird tangents. Like, I know certain things, and there are other major things that I just don't know.
Talk me through that.
I don't know. I think it's like I was obsessed as a child with small musicals. And I don't know why, but I loved, high school, let's say. A lot of it was I could go through the Samuel French musical catalog and I could get the scripts and I could get soundtracks. I could find soundtracks on like weird, you know, in the 90s when that stuff was like exciting to be able to curate all that. So anything that was like Pump Boys and Dinettes or Nonsense
Deb Monk, all over the place.
Anything Deb Monk touched, I was very, very aware of.
Absolutely.
But then there may other things too. Like I couldn't name, like, I mean, I don't really know. Like somebody scolded me that I didn't know like Betty Hutton did Annie Get Your Gun or like that kind of stuff. I don't always know.
I mean, that's like that is almost more of like a fag thing than a musical theater thing.
Yeah.
Because I mean, that movie was not a success.
Right.
And it's not like when Annie Get Your Gun was on Broadway, people were like, did you see the movie with Betty Hutton?
Right.
It's
not that
kind of a movie, you know?
And I also am not great about more current Broadway stuff.
No one is.
I go and see a lot of shows and I try to keep up with I try to see all the stuff that's nominated whenever I'm in town, but I don't. Then there are major pockets of stuff that I don't know.
I just want to find those pockets.
And then there are people there's like Audra McDonald, who I just saw on stage for the first time last year, and I'm like, you know, she was phenomenal, and I'm walking around going, Audra McDonald's amazing, and people are like, yeah, and pizza tastes good too. Yeah. Like, congratulations on your wild opinion.
Yeah, I don't know if I've seen Audra actually, just like in concerts and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I saw her in Frankie and Johnny, and I was blown away. I haven't even seen her sing live, but. Wow. You know,
but you have seen her naked.
Baby Steps.
I did.
So that's like
Michael
singing.
Shannon. Yeah, it was. It was beautiful.
I was thinking about this with you because the album we're talking about with you is Sylvester.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's actually, I guess I found it under the name Funk. Do You Want to Funk?
Do You Want to Funk?
Right.
But you called it by the actual original LP name.
I had to look it up too because he's one of those that like I really love. So many of his songs, but like that album, if you really listen to all the songs on All I Need, which I had to look that up as well, because I feel like he had a lot of LPs.
This is what I'm curious about, and that you made me think about it, talking about the pockets of musical theater, because I do think about you as someone that has like a very eclectic and wide pop culture and just cultural in general grasp on things, you know? But I was thinking, because you're a little younger than I am, and I'm certainly too young for Sylvester, except as like a retro thing.
Totally.
But it was not the retro that like my friends were listening to, you know, with their like hippie clothes in the 90s.
No.
I discovered Sylvester through Sandra Bernhardt.
Oh, sure.
But I want to know what your Sylvester
remember as a child, I guess it would have been, I saw the movie Trading Places way
Richard Pryor to, and Jackie Gleason.
That's the toy.
Right.
No. Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd.
Mm-hmm. Just racist.
And,
for days.
Yeah, just black that. Man, white man. Just fill in the blanks. I get it, Ben. We get what you're doing.
Rush Hour. No,
you're like Taxi, Queen Latifah, Jimmy Fallon. Eddie Murphy plays Billy Ray Valentine. He's homeless, and then Dan Aykroyd plays Winthorpe. I'm literally looking at this without
two old character actors are the rich
Ralph
guys.
Bellamy and the other guy. Yes. And then Jamie Lee Curtis is a hooker named Ophelia.
Right.
It's amazing. And it's very New York. It's very 80s. It has that very cold New York comedy to it. Mm-hmm. Also, Frank Oz has this amazing scene where he plays a cop and he like takes drugs out and starts tasting drugs and saying, oh, this is PCP. And of course, as a child, I'm like, I'm going to try that. I want drugs.
It's like Sweet Tarts.
Totally. And I remember like when the cops came and brought drugs to our school in the 80s and they showed us like in a briefcase. And I was like, do you taste them? To tell, oh, and the cop was like, no, because you would get high. And I'm like, well, they did in Trading Places. Boring cop in Charlotte, North Carolina. So anyway.
Is that where you're from? Or you
Yeah, at that time. I went to Charlotte that day just to, you know, find drugs. No, I remember seeing that movie, and Billy Ray Valentine he's homeless, and he gets the rich guys, like, switch places with Dan Aykroyd, who is wealthy, who has to become mm-hmm. homeless. And so it's that whole, you know. And he takes over the mansion, and he's playing Do You Want to Funk in the house. And it was the most joyous. I remember mm-hmm. seeing this party, and I'm like, I want to be that party. And there's this woman that's coming down the stairs, and everything is, it's the 80s, but it's like sliding after disco. But it still has that very, like, you know, dirty Times mm-hmm. Square, like in the early 80s vibe. And that's, I remember I was like, this is one of my favorite songs ever. And I just sort of like would always see it. And then I remember when I saw Sandra Bernhardt, one of her earliest shows.
Yeah.
Without You I'm Nothing. Yeah. It must have been where she sings You Make Me Feel Mighty Real. It's like a ballad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's so gorgeous. And I just, he's just always been a part of my, just sort of like, just everything about the 70s that I would read about. I always imagined Sylvester like underneath it all.
So when you heard this song on the movie, did you go out and buy the album after that, or did you buy
I don't. I think it was one of those things that I just like loved the song and mm-hmm. I didn't know. I mean, because I was probably like 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. I was too young to see that movie. And then I, you know.
Did you even know that it was sung by Sylvester, or were you just like, the great song?
No, I just was
scene.
Like, I love that song. Yeah. And then, you know, whenever, like, I don't remember when I'd heard it a couple other times mm-hmm. later. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, that's the song from Trading Places. Mm. And then, you know, as you do. And it is like a thing where, I mean, I feel like, it's so interesting because kids now can, like, you know, look that up and Shazam right. it or whatever and be like, oh, what's that thing? You know, but, you know, you sort of curate. And there's something, too, that's just so fascinating about, like, you know, as a queer kid, you just immediately respond to things.
Yeah,
like totally. That. You hear that song. You watch Eddie Murphy and a bunch of women in a mansion dancing around, and you're like, I need that song.
Yeah.
Because there's something queer you can feel in that music.
There's something I feel, and not even to get into the actual potential alleged queerness of Eddie Murphy. I mean, that's a whole...
Be careful.
I mean, no, not to be careful.
No,
I mean,
sure,
just,
I know what you mean.
Just that's a whole other can of worms. If you were going to stay for the full 2.5 hours of our guests, that we could talk about it. But you shouldn't feel guilty. But I do... It's funny because Eddie Murphy, I never felt alienated as a queer
either.
Even when he made fad jokes about... In like, what was it, Delirious, and you talk about the honeymooners guys wanting to sleep with each other, you know. I don't know if you remember that routine.
Yeah, I remember it's pretty rough. Delirious is pretty rough. If I like watch, I think I watched it again.
It's
pretty rough in the time. I mean, just because, you know, it's one of those things I'm like, you're really not allowed to say faggot. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you have that.
Little kid watching it,
I didn't respond to it as a kid.
I didn't
at all.
Find, I loved it, and I didn't feel that it pushed me away as I did with so many other things.
Sure.
And and I feel like it has to do with, you talk about that cold New York. There's that sense of Eddie Murphy that he was from a culture that was of the 70s and was more mixed and free.
Also,
and
as an actor, I loved when he would play women. And he's such a good actor. And like he never judged the women that he played. To America, he and Arsenio Hall both are like, shockingly, like, fantastic.
Such a good movie.
You know, and it's like, so I think there was that part of it that I always responded to, that I was like, oh, he sort of understands, you know, women in a way that, like, is more on the, like, queer side of things and, like, sort of hating them and doing high-pitched falsetto voices and sort of, like, doing that sort of take on women, like how, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But there's something about Sylvester's music that like also is like like I was telling you earlier today, it's very business sexy.
That's such a great Drew Drogi expression. Business sexy.
It's like we have a lot of work to do, but first we're gonna dance. And it's gonna get real hot up in here. But you have a job.
Yeah.
Your job is to do this.
Do the work.
Yes.
And which is also so 80s. It is like.
Well, I think it's that Sandra routine with the song is like the two straight guys out at a club and they take some ecstasy and like eventually they hook up in the story she like narrates over the song. But it, you know, it starts off just like these like yuppie, you know,
right.
What do you call it? Bright lights, big city kind
of
like evening out.
Jay McInerney, Freddie Easton Ellis.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Co-headed zombie nightmare vampire people. Yeah, totally. I know, and it's like there's just something about like that it's an anthem. It's a call to arms. There's something about it that feels very much like you know. I mean, that's the thing. Do You Want to Funk? That's on that album. Is really like, here's what you have to do right now if you want to funk. Let me tell you now. Do you want to funk with me? It's like, you know, it's a directive. Yeah, and you're like, I have to do this.
Yeah, totally.
It's like, and I always love dance songs that are like, you know, that tell you, like, get on the dance floor.
Yeah. Yes.
Do this now. And you're like, all right, I'm on board.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
I'm such a sub for that kind of stuff.
I mean, I don't think of you as a sub.
I feel like business
sexy is so good for you. I mean, I think I told you a million times how much I loved. I know we both did. Bright colors and bold patterns.
Oh, thank you.
But business sexy feels like such a thing that could have been a cut monologue.
Totally. Yeah. Well, thanks.
What was the song you used at the beginning of that? It was a Diana Ross.
It was My World is Empty Without You by Diana Ross. Good.
My world is empty without you, babe. My world is empty without you, babe. From this whole world, I'm trying to hide my face. But from this loneliness, there's no hiding place.
Yeah, that was inspired from, there was a time, one of my many weekends in Palm Springs, I heard a slowed down version of that song, and it was just, they had just taken her recording and they just slowed it down, and it is the most haunting, sad, creepy song ever. Like, it's like this stalker.
My world is empty without you.
Oh, I remember it was the Ace Hotel. And they were playing it, and DJ had it on, and I was just watching all these people in Palm Street, and everyone just kind of felt just so lonely for a minute. Mm. And I was like, this vibe is so right. And then, you know, when I was writing Bright Colors and Bold Patterns, and I was like, you can't start a show like that. And also, my character comes in talking a million miles a minute, so it's got to be, but you know, that song, it's like, it has that organ at the beginning of it, and it would always psych me out.
Yeah.
But I write a lot with music in mind. Mm-hmm. I'm always thinking, like, because the curtain call for that song was, oh my God, why did I literally set that up and I'm blanking on it? But it was Lady You Shot Me by Harmar Superstar.
Lady, you shot me.
And that was another one that I heard that, and I was like, it's just about being in line, like I'm in love with you, and I'll just stay in line until it's my time for you to be with me. And it's like, oh my God, so I always love high energy sad music. I think it's just like
high energy sad.
Yeah. I feel like for me, I always think of Robin as like that.
Oh, of course. And I love,
you know,
Robin.
I'm in the corner watching you kiss her. It's it's like dance music for like lonely people.
Oh,
you know?
It's wonderful.
I keep dancing.
absolutely
I love
great.
It so much.
What are the musical inspirations for the new play?
The new play, Happy Birthday Doug, the curtain call is You Make Me Feel Mighty Real.
So, yeah.
I just was like, oh, that's just a perfect, because Happy Birthday, Doug, I'm playing 9 different gay men at a birthday party for, obviously, for Doug. Mm-hmm. And so I'm playing all different ages, sizes, shapes mm-hmm. of gay men.
I'm so fucking excited.
And so so it was way more about the current experience of what that is. And I couldn't mm-hmm. imagine anything more of just our anthem than, mm-hmm. you know, You Make Me Feel Mighty Real. Mm. But then I did find some other, oh my God, what's the song? Casera, Casera, hit
oh,
the beat.
Oh, Lost
now.
In
Lost in
Emotion.
Lisa,
yeah.
Lisa, mm. Cold Jam.
Lost in Emotion. Telling you things you really should know. Maybe I'm lost in emotion. Am I a fool? At least my friends think so. Casera, Casera.
Yes,
so Lost in Emotion is very much in there. I also have Philadelphia Freedom by mm. Elton John because I needed
oh,
some
yes.
Elton in there.
Mm.
What else did I have in there? I also have Cupcake, the rapper. Do you know Cupcake?
Mm,
I say Cupcake
like
in the
weird.
Show. It's
yes.
spelled with 2 K's.
Cupcake, yeah.
yeah. You absolutely must check out her work because she has a song called Spider-Man Dick.
Oh.
And it is the filthiest song you've ever heard. It's like a throwback to like 90s.
Like
filth,
like
rap.
Peaches and stuff.
Yes, like, it's yeah. like it feels very much like Peaches mixed with like Two Live Crew, mm-hmm. and like the era where they were just singing so disgustingly.
Filth, yeah,
and she so owns it, and she's awesome, and I love her. And I wanted to put that in there. I don't know. I just was like, I found a bunch of stuff. I have one little thing, but it always. I mean, knock on wood, it gets covered by a laugh. We'll see. Maybe it may not some nights, but I have a tiny riff. You have to really hear it. That I have Annette Funicello singing "Monkey's Uncle."
I don't care.
Because that's also one of my favorite movies from childhood, and I love Annette. I'm like, people, mm-hmm. like queer people don't talk about Annette Funicello enough.
Yeah,
and I love that, and I just mm-hmm. was like, I'm going to throw that in. Why not?
I mean, you're also way too young for Annette Funicello. I mean,
yeah.
I think of her like from like Back
yeah,
to the
she's
Beach
my mom's,
and like
yeah,
you know,
sure.
weird mm-hmm. 80s like
right.
B movies. Like, is
well,
that
yeah,
your thing?
She did Back to the Beach. It was like I want to say 87. I did see that in a theater, but I was 10.
Yeah, right.
Because yeah. I was born in 77, and. But I watched, my mom is obsessed with
okay.
Frankie and Annette movies and mm-hmm. Tommy Kirk and Annette Funicello, like The Misadventures of Merlin Jones and The Monkey's Uncle and all those 60s Daffy mm-hmm. comedies that are usually like a nerd,
yeah.
a monkey, and Annette playing Annette. And she has that bubble hair. She is a very like divine, like
yeah,
Dawn Davenport
yes.
vibe
yeah.
to her.
Was she ever in a John Waters? Was she in Hairspray?
No, I don't think
she
that
seems
was ever...
like she would have been some like
I know.
Part
I wonder
in Hairspray.
What John Waters thinks about her. I wonder if he. But she would have been great in Hairspray.
Yeah,
I mean,
totally.
She would have been great. You know, in that world, she could have been like Penny Pingleton's mom. Or
totally,
something.
Yeah, totally.
You know, But I know that she got very, I mean, she was pretty wholesome. I mean, you know, she was very much, she did those like peanut butter ads.
Oh, right. She was a Jiffy.
I think it was like Jiffy
Skippy or something. Yeah.
I think, she did one of those. So, anyway, but I just was like, what an icon that we just don't really like bring up anymore. And I don't know. I always like the fun part about writing your own material is you can go, I'm going to put this in and you're either going to, you know, connect or not until somebody really says, this really doesn't make any sense that you have it in there, you know. It's fun to sort of think that way. And also, I just really enjoy, I love learning more about queer culture, obviously, and I just enjoy sharing what I know or sort of bringing in threads that I know, because it's like, I feel like we're still so limited in terms of, like, what we consider, you know, like, our taste. And I'm like, there's so many, which is all great, but it's like, there's other stuff, too. There are other levels. You can go deeper and find other things, and I always love like that. Like even on that on the Sylvester album, there's so many songs on there that like Disco Heat, I think, is on that song, which is so good. And it's like one that you don't really know.
One I knew on this album was Do You Want to Funk? But I was surprised reading about the album that it was considered like his new wave album, like was not, I mean, how I
totally
have thought of that.
Totally, I know. And it's like, I feel like everyone, but he's definitely got, he one of the songs on there is called Hard Up, and there's a music video on there which is so homoerotic and it's so weird that they cover it with, they try to do this like Cleopatra pyramids vibe on there, but he's all about like, he's all over a snake and he's like just vibing on this guy, and you just see like close-ups of like biceps and like just total male form, and then it's like Sylvester in all her glory with like the long hair and like with snakes all going all up the arms and stuff. And then it just cuts to a woman and it's like, you know, it thinks it's coded in the 80s. Yeah, it's right. Like in the 80s was like, oh yeah, there's a woman there. So
it doesn't count.
You know, but you look at it now and you're like, there's no denying this is. And it's called Hard Up. And it's like, I'm just hard up for the D.
Things that you saw as sort of openly queer beacons to you, like, you know, non-coded stuff, or the earlier ones, you know? Now, of course, I guess stuff is everywhere, but.
Sure, I would definitely say, I don't know, but Batman, I mean, thinking about like the watching old stuff, my mom would always put us in front of like Hitchcock movies and the Batman TV show.
Yeah,
so the 60s Batman show for sure had that vibe to me. And then I don't know, I'm such a horror fan, so like Freddy Krueger movies especially. I mean, Nightmare 2 is so overtly gay. But I think there's something about Freddy Krueger that's very queer that I really related to. Thriller was one of the first things that I really just sort of like hooked into. I remember exactly where I was when I saw Boy George on MTV. And I was like, that's a thing. That's a possibility.
Yeah.
You know, and
What did you think? Because he was, I feel like in that early 80s moment with Boy George, when Cyndi Lauper was still kind of equal to Madonna.
Sure,
you know,
right.
There seemed to be so much like variety of artists and things that there was room for everybody.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden, a couple years later, it was like more corporate commercial 80s and he just kind of disappeared. And, you know, George Michael had become a like heterosexual sex symbol. George was gone.
Sure. Right.
What did you hold? I mean, my fantasy of you being like this, like just like brilliant, like weirdo, was like carrying the torch and not being homogenized by that moment.
Oh God, I wish I was that cool. I went through a real period of like just wanting to fit in, and I was like, I wore a lot of khaki and a lot of like, you know, and I had like a bowl cut. I wore like horrible like olive sweater vest and like khaki shorts.
Like JCPenney catalog.
Yeah. Or like
all the sweater vests
Rich's
were huge.
Great Outdoors.
Yes. You know,
like,
yes.
You remember that like sort of vibe? Like it was very, and then I got into Structure, which is so
Structure.
Like, I mean,
well,
talk about
just
that.
Express for men.
Totally.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And that was more like the weird velvet shirt, you know?
Yeah.
But I definitely got into, I don't know, like I always, you know, I always loved Madonna. I always loved B-52s. I, to this day, swear that Sinead O'Connor's the best singer on earth. I mean, I think I love her voice
so much.
What is
your favorite Sinead song?
Oh, there's so many. I almost picked that for this, too, because I was thinking about that. I mean, Mandinka is so good. I mean, The Lion and the Cobra, that album is just a perfect album.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
I Want Your Hands on Me, which is in Nightmare on Elm Street 4, just crossover.
Is she doing okay? Didn't she have some sort of breakdown?
I don't know. I think she's in. Yeah. She struggled with mental illness for a really, really long time.
She's like posting Facebook videos or something weird.
Yeah, there were some major meltdowns going on, and you know, and God, she really went through it. Because also, like, I mean, nothing compares to you. You know, no shade towards Prince or anything, but like that song wouldn't have worked if Prince. I mean, it would have just been another Prince song. But the fact that her voice, that song, cut through, and all people did was go look at the bald woman. Like, it was so, I mean, because that was post Boy George and all that. And
totally.
It was like, she was such a freak. And it was like, and I loved the, and I, and again, I, you know, I loved when Jan Hooks played her on Saturday Night Live. Yeah. And I loved that thing that they, she was doing. I responded to that, but I also was like, but I love that person in there too. And I, she also has an album of all 40s standards. But then she sings Don't Cry For Me Argentina.
Oh, yes. Am I Not Your Only Girl?
Yes.
The only Sinead O'Connor album I own.
Okay, okay. And it's like, she's, you know, Why Don't You Do Right? And she sings that, and she sings. And it's also awesome. But it's like, there's no, I mean, there's so many different, like, styles that she can do. And I really do just think she, I mean, I can just listen to her wail forever. And I just, it's, and I feel like every 90s female singer tried to sound like Sinead O'Connor afterwards. They're like, that Irish lilt is what I want.
Yeah.
So everyone after that, it was like Natalie Merchant and the Cranberries and fill in the blank. There were so many like voices.
Oh my God, the Cranberries.
That
is
all
so
like just, I think they all owe it to Sinead. Not that that's not literally their how their voices sound too, but I just think there's something about how Sinead just like is a trailblazer. And I really do wish her well because I mean, you know. And then when she ripped up the picture of the Pope on SNL, it was like done. Her career was over.
Yes. So crazy.
Whereas now, I think people would applaud her boldness for doing something.
I mean, now we wish the Pope was like our biggest problem.
Exactly.
It's like the Dixie Chicks and George Bush.
Yeah, exactly.
Such a big deal at the time.
It was so weird.
Or Jane Fonda in the 70s.
Sure, yeah.
Oh, God, to this day, like my, talk about my, someone that like, if your name is brought up at my, at the family dinner table.
Yeah,
right.
It's just like, Jane Fonda? Well, you know. Politics, I don't care for. And you're like, Jane Fonda? She's awesome. How do you not like Jane Fonda?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And you, I feel so much empathy. Imagine being over 60 or over 70 and not even being able to claim Jane Fonda as like your star.
Right. I know. I remember I got into some fight with my dad because my dad, RIP, miss you, Dad, love you. But it was, we'd get into it because he was very conservative, and we would get into these like debates. And I remember, I mean, this was probably college, so I was in my like early 20s at this point. And something came up about Jane Fonda. My dad was just like, oh my God, Jane Fonda, the worst nightmare. I go, she's amazing. She's a hero. Like, she's incredible. Right. And I'm like, fill in the blank. What do you want to talk about? We want to talk about Clue? We want to talk about Hanoi? Like, what? She's
good. Yeah.
And my dad was like, oh, I picked her up at, my dad went to Clemson in South Carolina. He's like, she came and spoke at Clemson, and I picked her up from the airport, and I drove her to school, and she chain-smoked and cussed like a sailor. And I'm like, Dad, you have never told
first
me.
First of all, you're keeping this.
Jane Fonda was in your car.
Oh, my God.
I would
God.
Be like, roll up the windows, get a carton, and cuss away.
Yes, please.
I want to hear everything you have to say. And my dad was just so, like, and I was like, that is so crazy funny. To me that it was just like, it came out in a moment of rage. Like, he had held on to that.
It's almost like he didn't want people to know.
Right, and it's not like my dad knew celebrities. We're in North Carolina. It's like we didn't know celebrity. Right. We had no connection to these people. But he just was like, oh, yeah, that happened. Anyway.
So your parents are conservative. Mm-hmm. What did they think about your show? Because I think I met them after party.
Oh, okay. You met my mom
Bright
and my stepdad.
Oh, your stepdad.
At Bright Colors.
They're so sweet.
They're
so proud of you.
Yes, they are. Thank you. I love them, I guess I have to say. My stepfather passed away earlier this year. So my mom and stepbrother, it was a big deal for them to come. I was very nervous about...
Do they still live in Charlotte?
They are. My mom is in South Carolina now. She lives in a small town near Myrtle Beach. And my mom is always the person who is always very socially liberal and physically conservative. Like that person that people, you know, and you're like, kind of it's hard to, you know, anyway... So my mom was never also an interior designer, and we were always around gay people growing up. So that was never an issue, and I'm very lucky with that. And I never felt like at all like there was ever an issue there. But it was I was nervous that my mom was going to come to that show and be worried about me and think that this was my all the drugs I'm doing, all the loneliness, and the fact that like I was really like, oh God, she's going to come and she's going to cry and think like this is a cry for help and she's gonna feel and I just that was what I was worried about more than any of the gay stuff and you know, and I hadn't really considered my stepfather because they've been married about 10 or 12 years. He is way more conservative, and like I had long, you know, Trump conversations with him late at night, and I was more like, I want to know, tell me all the stuff. And we had great conversations about it. And I actually did learn a lot from his perspective of why he voted the way he did. And like, so, but still, I hadn't really considered, I didn't really care. I mean, again, he thought, you know, I was like, we met when we were adults.
Well, it's your work.
And this is my mother. Yeah. I care about my mother. I was so nervous on opening night because my mother was there. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, well, if her husband is like weird about it and whatever, I don't really care.
Sure.
And then my mom was lovely in the night before the show. She was like, I heard you on a podcast saying you were really worried that I was going to watch it. And she's like, you're a writer, honey, you're a writer. And I know this isn't going to you, and I'm fine. And it was like, you know.
You're like, well, it's kind of me.
Kind of me. It all came from this head, mama. But then my stepfather was the one who was the most like, who I had a talk with, who was the most changed after I talked to him about it. And he was the one that was like, you know, your play taught me a lot. And he was like, and I really do. I hope you know that I believe that, like, people love who they love. And, like, we had that talk. And I was like,
beautiful.
Oh, my God. And, you know, it was one of those moments where you're like, I find that, like, I'm so not writing from that place of, like, we're queer and accept us. Like, but that was the level that he understood it. And he needed to hear it on that way. Whereas I'm like saying, here's what's wrong with gay people. This is how we ruin each other and ourselves. But he, in his mind, he was like, I need to, you know. And so that really touched me because I was like, I never thought that he would even look at it that way. Mm-hmm. Also, at the after party, he became like best friends immediately with Randy Jones from the Village People.
Oh, really?
My parents
had become best friends with Randy Jones at an after party, too. Can he give them a CD and a business card and a postcard?
Yes. And so my stepfather was always asking about, like, how's Randy doing? Every time I look at him, I'm like, I don't know. I think he's good. I have run into him a couple times. Yes. He's lovely. I mean, you know, but... You connected up with him way more than I did, you know, and so
funny,
you know, and just like it just feels so on the nose. You're like, oh, you know, you're step that comes in, and then the guy from the Village People
is
the guy that, you know, comes, you know, but anyway,
embrace it,
totally.
I want to know, how did you move to LA right after college?
I did, and 20 years ago,
So, I mean. You know what? That's like what? That's more than. That's another 10 years before you did like the Chloe videos and everything, and like
you
were in like the Groundlings.
I did the Groundlings. I did UCB later, but I started at the Groundlings right when I moved.
Did you already know that was like really cool, and that's where like all the SNL people and
I had never done improv before, and in college I didn't do like the sketch comedy troupe or anything. I did a lot of theater, and I constantly wanted to be like a serious actor,
A writer.
No, I didn't think I was a writer then either, and I just was like, I actually went to Wake Forest to be an English major, and I was going to do theater on the side, and then the English major was like all like. like old dead white guys and so much reading and so much writing, and it was so hard, and just there was nothing creative about it, and the theater department was just a lot more interesting. And so that kind of did that. And then I was like, I had friends living in LA. I love the weather in LA. I mean, I always like New York was, and to this day is still like more intimidating to me in a way of like New York.
Have you never
it.
Lived here?
I've never lived here, officially lived here. And
but you were here for several months when you
yes,
were doing Bright
yes,
Colors.
I did. I was here for 3 months doing Bright Colors, and so mm-hmm. and I come here like, you know, 6 or 8 times a year. So I'm here a lot now, yeah. but I've never like had residence here. But I the Groundlings. I went into the lobby and I saw so many of those actors that I just loved, mm-hmm. and I had just seen this movie Go. The
oh yeah,
Sarah Pauly.
Scott Wolf.
Yes, right? yes, Scott Wolf and. Who is his Tim Olyphant's in it as well, but it's like Scott Wolf.
Oh,
and
Jay Mohr.
Jay Mohr, thank you. God, and they play terrible. A gay couple in it.
Right. That's
and
what
do,
I
you remember?
Oh.
Yeah. Do you
I
remember?
I never saw Party of Five, but I saw Go.
When they find out they're cheating on each other with the same guy, they go to his house and he's not there, but his sister is there. And do you remember who played his sister?
Oh, I'm so excited.
In that
to
movie.
Know.
Mm-mm. Melissa McCarthy.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was the first thing I had ever seen her in. I think it was maybe her first movie. Mm-hmm. She has like 5 lines. I saw it in the theater and I was like, who is this person?
I need to rewatch
Star. I'm obsessed with this person. This is the funniest person I've ever seen. And so then when I went and visited the Groundlings, she was in the Sunday Company at the time.
Oh,
and
wow.
I saw her headshot and I said, that is the girl mm-hmm. from Go. And you know, and every time, and you know, and we, you know, it was crazy, like sort of like going through the program and watching her blow up and like getting to know her and like all these people through it. And you just see like these character actors that are just monster talents, and the mm-hmm. training was so good. Mm. And I just was like, I love Lisa Kudrow. I love Jennifer Coolidge. You know, Phil Hartman, all these people. I'm like, I want to go there. So I took classes there for a long time. I was in classes there longer than college because mm-hmm. the waiting list is forever. And then I did the Sunday Company for a year and a half. And then it was a blessing in disguise and that I didn't get into the main company. And then it just made, it kicked me out and made me sort of find a new home. Mm-hmm. And so I went to UCB and then I was in a gay sketch comedy group in LA. And then that's where I started like doing like Chloe on stage.
Is that the Orphans? Is that?
It was called the Deviants. Mm. The Orphans is Jim Hansen's company that makes the Chloe videos
on YouTube.
And yeah. And so I just was doing like a lot of like, and then I sort of fell into drag stuff because I never, I was doing all sketch comedy stuff and I never thought I was a drag queen. Still don't, especially when I'm in shows with like Jackie Beat and Sherry Vine and Alaska. Mm-hmm. I'm like, these are drag queens and they're amazing. Yeah.
But there's other people like Alec Mappa does.
Right,
this,
Alec Mappa,
right?
Sam Pancake. Sure. Sam Pancake and I are like, we're like the booger queens. Like we like,
yes.
Know? And we
yeah, your
that
rose
more,
is so funny.
Oh my
like,
God!
I mean, I've
you.
Never seen it. My dream is to like come and see
oh,
it because
really
it's always
weird.
That time.
It's really weird.
It's always
all
a time when
it's
I can't
like it's
come.
An acid trip. It's like Betty White has done some major shrooms. But yeah. So I just sort of fell into stuff that way, and I just by like performing a lot live, and then obviously Jim Hansen was like, "Let's make videos," and I didn't want to do it because I was like, "I don't want to." I just was I had this weird hang up about it. I mean, Chloe was something I tried not to do for so long.
Had you done Chloe live first?
Oh yes, for like maybe 10 years before that.
Oh wow!
So people are like,
well,
this
let's
is...
see, I not that long, but I think 2002.
What
was
that
the
like
first
Big
time
Love?
I did. Yes.
Yeah.
And it was when she had curly blonde hair, and we really looked a lot alike. And I didn't do any makeup then. I just had my own hair. I put like a ribbon in my hair and did like a glitter top.
And was
I was
it always
super
like,
skinny then, and I had like jeans. I would just do jeans and heels and a glitter top, and be like super like
so
you know
funny.
Yeah, and that was it.
Was it always like the same sort of like name droppy?
Yes, from
like,
day
weird
one. It was oh, it was definitely 2002 because it was right after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Nathan Lane and all these celebrities were doing like come to New York ads.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm.
And I read an interview with Chloe Sevigny, and she was referencing such downtown and hyper specific references. And I was like, what if Chloe Sevigny did one? And she was trying to talk to Middle America about coming to New York. So that's where Good Evening America
Good
evening, came
yeah.
from. So I've always done that from day one. You know, I went on stage and was like, Good Evening America, I'm Chloe Sevigny, and you know, it's recently come to my attention that I love New York. And that's been from the beginning.
I mean, I can't tell you how many Brooklyn house parties I've been
yes.
at
yes.
drunk. And then eventually, you know, we reach the time and I where the Chloe videos come
yeah.
on. You know,
oh,
we turn
yeah.
on YouTube and we hit shuffle and it's everyone just like beds down and watches your videos.
Oh my God.
So fun.
It's so crazy to me to hear that because It was something that I just, because I, before the videos, I would do it on stage and I would never know if it would, sometimes it would bomb so hard. And it's so rough because there's no real.
Were you doing that in the Sunday night, like Groundlings?
I did
shows?
It in the Groundlings for, yes. And even then I wanted to end because I was like, the Sunday company, you have to write new material every week. Mm-hmm. And so if you get a sketch that works, the longest you can run it is 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then you're in a new. And so I was doing for a year and a half. So I did one time. I did maybe 5 weeks of a Chloe sketch, maybe once. And that was during Brown Bunny when I was doing, that was during that time. Mm-hmm. So that was before the videos. When I was in the Groundlings, it was before the videos. So yeah, it was a real blessing. Like I said, had I stayed in the Groundlings, I don't know if I would have been inspired to make videos. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I'm so grateful to the Groundlings for all the training and then for kicking me out at the right time, really. And I teach there. So I go back and I teach there and I still perform there a lot. And
what about like, I mean, you've done like so many guest spots on TV shows and movies. Did that all start, like, did you get like a big agent after the Chloe videos like hit?
It was
like,
before, how did that happen? It really was from the Groundlings and I started getting jobs through, like Reno 911 was my first TV job because I knew some of those people. And I remember auditioning for that and, you know, but like, you know, I just sort of like, people started getting in positions to hire. And then I just sort of got from there. And then my agents definitely came through with the videos and everything. And I was with some big agents years ago and they would just not return my calls. And so I have a boutique agent that I love who works really hard for me. And, you know, I just talk to him all, you know, a couple times a week. And I way prefer that sort of thing, that relationship. Mm-hmm. And so, but yeah, I do, it would be great like one day to get to a point where I'm not so DIY, but I'm also like, I kind of am grateful for that too, because it's like, I know that like, even with my show with Happy Birthday Doug, where it's very lo-fi. I mean, it's like, it is a bare bones. We're doing 4 shows a week for 4 weeks downtown in Soho. And it's like, I'm happy that I can carry the whole thing in my backpack, you know? And like, I love that writing taught me that. Writing was like, when I got that gift to be like, make your own material, you're going to be the best at your own material.
Right.
And then you just do that, and then you're like, oh, you know, when you get asked to be on the TV shows or the movies or whatever, that's always really nice, and that's always good money. But
well, that's such a good lesson also for young actors, because, you know, certainly some of the people we've had on the pod, you know, Varla, Cola Scola, and, you know, Ben with his one-man show, it's like you're not waiting for people to give you work. You create your own work, and then the offers come from that as well.
Totally.
And that's such a lesson that I'm trying to learn myself.
Yeah, it's hard because it's so terrifying to put things out there. I think at first, if you have nothing out there, you're like, oh, the first thing I put out there has to be the best thing in the world.
And what was the first thing for you?
I have no memory, and that's what I would say, is just start making things and throw it out there.
Yeah.
Because the world will tell you.
But does that mean that you were doing just like 5, 10, 15 minutes in these evenings of like a bunch of different artists?
Yeah, I did a lot of that. I will say the first thing that I did that hit was Mike Rose and Tyler Spears and I did this cartoon called Planet Unicorn that was about a gay three gay unicorns, you know, and it was a cartoon. And that really hit. That was like pre-YouTube. I want to say that was Channel 101. And so, but that was something that we had no idea would be a hit. We were doing Channel 101 shows that are still happening. Yeah. They do these monthly, you know. So I would just say, like, make things, put them out there. If they aren't good, they go away. Like, people just don't watch them. No one goes, hey, watch this thing. I mean, unless you're, like, Rebecca Black level horrible. Yes. But then it's like, you know, but if you're making comedy and it's not great, you know, who cares? You'll make more. You'll get better. And then, because I think so many people are so afraid of the beginning stages of going, this may not be the best thing. And guess what? It might be amazing. It might be like the best thing that you don't know. Because I don't know. I mean, my new show, I was terrified of doing because I was like, I did an hour of new material. I didn't try out any of it like an idiot. And I did it at Dynasty Typewriter in LA last year in front of 200 people. And I was like, this could be terrible. And I'm also playing 9 gay men. I'm making a big statement about who we are and what we're doing. Is this going to be hateful? Is this going to be boring? Is it going to be basic? Is it going to be too, you know, is it at all funny? And again, you go through that never stops. And it shouldn't stop, I don't think. I think it keeps you going. But, you know, I had to tell myself, like, you know, 8 o'clock happens and you got to do it. And if it doesn't work, then you just do something else. Like, it's
you'll
not
learn for
right.
next time. Yeah.
Right. Well, and explain to me, because I hear so much about Dynasty Typewriter, and I think for the longest time I got it confused with Dynasty Handbag.
I know. Yes, I know. And I've talked to Dynasty Handbag about it, and she's like, what is this theater that ripped my name?
So explain for me and any of our East Coast listeners.
Okay, so Dynasty, I'm glad you asked that, because I say all the time, people look like, what are you saying?
I mean, the name is so cool, you want to be
so
part
cool.
of it.
Right. Yeah. Dynasty Typewriter is the newest hotspot for comedy in L.A. It is the old Hayworth Theater in horrible MacArthur Park. Like, there's very little around there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's this gorgeous theater. And the Hayworth is kind of falling apart. Jenji Cohen somehow got involved in it, bought the space, turned it around. Jamie Flam and Vanessa Ragland run this place. They have turned it into the most adorable jewel box. It's a 200-seat theater.
Wow.
It's all like lime green on the inside. They have the best popcorn. They're known for like best popcorn on the West Coast or something.
Oh, I love it.
And so
I'm
you
in.
Get like popcorn and snacks and you sit and it is, it's an old movie house from back in the 40s that they've turned into a theater. And I mean, Adam Sandler has done did a week residency there.
Oh, wow.
Hannah Gadsby's done her, like all these people, like, because you go there to workshop new material.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known Jamie and Vanessa forever and they offered me two nights in June when I could, and I just was.
That was when you.
That's when I
the first
premiered
version.
Happy Birthday Duck for the first.
But
time.
But then you did it at the cel because Tom is the director.
Tom Petrinus is
the artistic director of the Celebration Theater, right?
Am I getting that mixed up? Yeah, he was director of alternative programming.
Okay,
anyone listening at Celebration Theater, like yeah, you know, yeah, but sure, yeah, he's a, yes, and Tom is phenomenal.
Yeah,
truly one of my favorite like people on earth, but also such a creative. I don't know anyone on earth that can do all the things that Tom Petrinus does so well. I don't know anyone who can act, who is so funny and such a great performer, but also can produce and direct. He does everything, and I love working with him. We've done a million shows together. He sort of seemed like the natural choice to work with. We obviously wanted to involve Michael Urie again because we obviously love him. He's the angel of the world, and we want it. And so he is so busy, and obviously in New York.
I'm going to see his show tonight.
It's so good.
Good. Okay, good.
Grand Horizons is wonderful.
Great,
it's actually really moving. Get ready.
Wonderful.
I was like expecting a comedy,
it.
But it's I mean, it is. It's very funny, but it's also... And he's so good in it.
Oh,
so Michael is...
But so he's a presenter.
He's a presenter
the
of the show.
Yeah.
But just like, it's pretty much the same team.
And Zach Lax is producing.
Zach Lax is producing
as
well.
Love him. Friend of the pod.
Yeah, friend of the pod. And... So they're all, it's all the same team from Bright Colors, because Tom was associate producer and my understudy on Bright Colors. So
oh, that rings
we've
a bell
all sort of like done this before, so we're really excited to, you know, bring it all back. And do it again.
Bright Colors has had quite a life. I mean, first of all, everyone should know, if they didn't see it, it's on Broadway HD.
Get it on
Amazon Prime, where they can download it. It's so wonderful. And is it published also?
Yes, you can contact us directly. We're self-publishing.
Contact them directly.
Yeah, contact them directly.
It's worth reading.
I need a copy.
And have you done it, I mean, I know you did it, obviously, in New York and L.A. And
right.
Where else?
And I did it back in the day. I did it one night in Provincetown.
Ooh,
I did
where
it,
in Pete?
At the Conan Anchor, just one night for.
Oh my God.
And then I did, let's see, I did it in a girl's backyard one time in LA. She hired me to do it in her backyard with like, it was like really fun. But then once we finished New York, then Jeff Hiller took over.
Yes,
for me,
and I got
to
see him.
Brilliant.
I saw him once too, yeah.
So great. And I just, like, he actually just did so many things, and it's so fun. I never thought I would give it up to anybody else.
Yeah.
And then I got to a point after I did it about 150 times, I was like, I think I'm done with this. Not forever, but I was tired and I was bored at my own, like, voice and performance and everything. And I just was watching myself do the same things over and over
How
again.
How many shows a week had you been doing?
I was doing 7 a week.
I was like,
and then,
a run.
Yeah, it was a run.
I was like, a play.
And then, when Jeff took over, he just added so much to it. And I watched it and I got to a point where he taught me about the play, and I was like, oh my God, that's that, and that's this and that. And he was so good. And then he did it in D.C. this summer.
Right.
And then we've had productions of it. We just closed. There was a production in Detroit that just...
Did you go see it?
I didn't. I haven't been able to see it anywhere except for... I saw Jeff do it in D.C.
Yeah.
But there was a production in Buffalo. There, and then in Texas. So it's been a couple places. And
how wonderful.
It's really exciting, and it's really crazy to, like, watch people... talk about the show and like, you know, and it's like something I never thought would happen.
And now it's out in the world.
Yeah,
the
it's
life
really,
of its own.
Really
it's
like cool. Child,
have you come know? In to own your identity as a writer now?
Yes, I think so. I mean,
you write on some shows too, right?
I just wrote on AJ and the Queen.
Yes,
and
which I love.
We watched
I have
that.
To tell you.
Oh, I know. It's so great. It's so sweet.
We lived for it.
I had a
please tell
such
me
a good
gonna
time.
Be a second season.
I don't know. We don't. I mean, I don't know yet.
So badly.
I haven't been told either way, so I don't know. I hope so. It was a dream come true getting to work with RuPaul and Michael Patrick King. I mean,
oh,
come
absolutely.
On, those two.
Yeah, Michael Leon Woolley was so
oh my God,
great.
How wonderful
so
is good. He? Well, you know, it was a lot of people doing this for the first time. Mm-hmm. For like a lot of those series regulars had never. Had their own TV show before. They all have been working forever. I mean, yeah. Michael Leon Woolley is Broadway royalty, but it's like, you're getting a TV show, ML, and like, boom. RuPaul had never really gone this way and done like dramatic character acting that's not him. I mean, Robert is not really Ru.
Yeah.
Right. And he's really wonderful and
so
magical.
Much.
And then you're getting to watch RuPaul do drag numbers, which we haven't seen in a million
years. That's
yes.
what we said.
Yes.
Have we never seen RuPaul lip sync?
I was like, RuPaul actually can lip sync.
Yeah, and he's really wonderful at that. And, you know, and chills when you're in the room with RuPaul in drag. And then Ru, as
you like
Ru,
in the writer's room with
yes,
Ru?
I was in, yes.
Wow.
And so I had a lot of time with him there. And just like, you know, he's so down to earth. He's honestly like, he has time for everyone. He's interested in everyone. He's very just, he's just a very.
Has he seen your Golden Girls parody
no,
show? Because he loves
not.
Golden Girls.
He does love Golden Girls. And I believe I've definitely talked to him about it, but he has not come to that. He did come and see Bright Colors.
Oh, wonderful.
He saw Jeff
right.
do Bright Colors and was very supportive of that. And he was very instrumental in me even getting the job because we met him for another thing that I was trying to develop with a friend. And we met with him. And then a few weeks later, he was too busy to do it because he's a tad busy. Mm-hmm. And then it was my manager called and said, Ru has recommended you to write on his show. And then I had known Michael through, we'd worked together a couple times. And so I interviewed with them. But it was like, so I really have RuPaul to thank for the gig. And I learned so much. It was so hard. The schedule at Netflix is so fast. So
were there a lot of people in the writer's room?
No, it was a really small room. There were only like five or six, you know, in there. So we were really learning some a lot of, for the first time, a lot of new staff writers. I was certainly new, you know, and like I said, it was like, you know, I mean, Tia Carrera, from Wayne's World and, you know, who's amazing, truly
yes,
incredible,
really, totally.
But like her first time doing like really broad comedy and nailing that, like, and we had a 10-year-old girl who's first, Izzy G. So like I felt like everybody was really, excited because we were all doing something new and together and it was very collaborative.
Energy.
We had Latrice Royale in the room and that's who I get to write my episode for.
Fabulous.
And Latrice was just, I mean, just, he is so smart and such a good actor. I mean, he made my episode just fly and he was just also like, he has so much incredible life experience that he could share. So we were really like, what's it like in drag clubs now? And, you know, RuPaul was, like, admitting, like, I don't really know what that's like.
Right.
It's hardly, like, I have perspective on that now.
Yeah.
I can't walk into it, you know, and not get immediately clocked. And
Latrice, I loved her cabaret show.
I saw it twice. With Christopher?
Laurie Beachman. Yes.
With her husband. Okay,
Everyone was crying.
I've got to see it.
So
I'm dying
to
see
it.
I'm a fan for life.
I have a question for Drew, and we don't do this with most guests, but this will transition into our final segment.
Okay.
But since it's you, I have to ask, who are your divas?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Well, my go-to that I always say is Diane Wiest.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm obsessed with Miss Diane Wiest. I love
I saw her several times in the park last year performing
Beckett. Happy Days.
Yeah.
Happy Days.
I saw that in L.A., and it was mind-blowing.
Incredible.
It was like Stereo of Consciousness. I'm like,
someone
wrote this?
Yeah.
Beckett? Oh, his name's
Beckett?
Who is that? She's amazing. My other divas are definitely Kathleen Turner.
Oh, we're trying to get her on here.
Oh, my God. I'm
Daniel's
blah, blah,
trying.
Blah.
I'm trying not
to. love her.
I love Kathleen. I mean, you know, I have a lot. I love Julianne Moore.
Mm-hmm.
I love... I mean, you know, there. I mean, I could go down there the list of like, I don't know. They're Glenn Close for sure. I love
absolutely.
Meryl, of course. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, I feel like they're the obvious ones.
Mm-hmm. What is your favorite Glenn Close performance?
Oh, Sunset Boulevard. The first time I saw her do it on stage.
I'm sorry, I meant in her home medium on film.
Oh, in film, in film. My favorite.
Ben is such a patty.
We'll cut that.
Dangerous Liaisons.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking.
Okay.
We don't cut anything.
I was like, okay. Yeah,
we don't even cut, like, burps and, like.
I would say, I mean, I'm going to say Fatal Attraction. I mean, love her in Dangerous Liaisons. But Fatal Attraction is a truly masterful performance.
Oh, her performance in that is so incredible.
And I would also argue that The Wife is right up there for me too. It blew me away.
Yeah.
And I just was like, who else could do that? I mean, I just was.
And her Instagram is a gift.
It's the best thing ever. I mean, her dog and the thing.
The fact that she was at the SAG Awards and she kept referring to them as the Golden Globes over multiple posts. I was like, okay, no one's telling her, God, or she just doesn't care. Who cares?
I love that.
Yeah. But being in the, like, seeing her live is also really, she's spectacular. I mean, she really is. I'm a huge fan of her. And, you know, and I have to say, my number one is Carol Burnett.
Oh,
I
have to,
and then that's really like the reason. Yeah, I mean, like, when people are like, well, your inspirations. Mm-hmm. So I have to say,
have you ever met Carol?
No, I haven't. And, we have a mutual friend, and it's one of those weird things that I'm so like, when am I going to get the gumption to just be like, can I meet her? But I don't even know what I would say to her. I feel like I would just start crying if I met her. I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Well, you want her to come to your show.
Sure.
Yes,
you know,
she would love
you want her to, you know,
your show.
It's the thing when I met John Waters, cause he's the other one for me and he's so lovely. And I've gotten to meet him a couple times and, got to interview him once and he's great, but you immediately are like, there's nothing I can tell you that you haven't heard.
Right, yeah.
And I want you to know who I am and I want you to think I'm cool. And I'm not really a fan of a lot of people, but when I get that way, I'm like, I am a dork.
Yeah.
And they've heard it before. And like, it's, you know, and they're lovely, but they're also like, I don't care that you love me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. It's like, and that's valid. It's sort of like, it's really my love for them is about me more than them.
Totally.
Right.
In a certain way. And so, you know, with Carol Burnett, I'm like, I don't even know. I would be like, I'd love to go to lunch with her, but I'm like, how exhausting for her. And I also, I'm like, would I just be nervous the whole time and just giggling? And I talked to John Waters on the phone and I couldn't stop laughing. And I was like, I've never been this way. And even like Diane Wiest, who's like my diva when I always say that. I got to work with Diane Wiest and it was a blast. And I forgot for that day that I was, and then it was on the ride home that I was like shaking.
Oh,
and I was like, oh my God, Drew. You just got to work, you know, but she's so wonderful. And
but
just
it's
such,
separate. I mean, it's just a separate thing. Them
and
as
work,
a human being on the same plane as you is not what your day-to-day relationship with this
It has to be. Mm-hmm. It has to be. Because Rue is that way. I constantly pinch myself, too. That I would, you know, I'd be like, I was with RuPaul all day today. That's really cool.
Right,
Because he's such a hero of mine. And it's like, you know, and Michael Patrick King. I mean, my God, he did the comeback.
Yeah. We were just talking about the comeback.
Shows ever. God, the comeback.
And I'm like,
comeback.
You're my boss. This is really cool. Like, you know, I mean, that's the kind of thing. But when you're in the middle of it, you're not thinking that way. You can't think that way.
I want you to be a writer and co-star on season 3 of The Comeback.
Oh, my God.
That is my wish for the universe.
Totally. Dream.
Well, we play a guest with all of our games.
I love it.
Which is, it's a variation on Mary Fuck Kill. It's Dolly Concert Kill. So we're going to give you 3 performers, and you'll choose one to see as Dolly Levi in Hello Dolly.
Okay.
And one to see in concert, which can be any point in their career where you would like that to happen. And one that gets the axe.
Okay.
And so
they get like what they get the axe as in they're just fired or like canceled. But
no, they're murdered.
Killed.
Yeah,
in front of me.
Yes.
Vacation. Whatever.
For older people, we made it a Dolly Concert Chill because they didn't want to kill anybody.
Dolly
Concert.
But you
can fucking kill somebody. I mean, I want to Glenn. Diane.
Oh, you made me.
Carol.
Oh,
Carol
you're gonna make me take my own. I thought you were gonna give me randoms. Oh my God.
We've been gathering the evidence.
It's Glenn Close, Diane Wiest, Carol Burnett.
Yes. Totally.
Okay.
Oh, this is good.
Glenn Close, Diane Wiest, Carol Burnett.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay.
This might be honestly the best.
This is a really good
posse.
So I'm going to cast Hello Dolly first.
Yes.
Who would I want to see as Hello Dolly?
Have you seen it?
I have. I've seen it 3 times. The most recent one.
Donna, Beth.
I saw it
Bernadette.
With Donna, Bernadette, and Betty Buckley.
Oh,
I did not
fabulous.
See Bette Midler.
Interesting.
Fabulous.
And Donna Murphy was my favorite.
Oh, she was great.
She was phenomenal. I also saw her very first performance. When the audience was rabid, even though her name was above the title, they were like, "Where's Bette Midler?"
Oh.
And she had so much to work against.
Yeah. That's how I like Donna, proving herself.
Oh, yes. And boy, did she. Because, I mean, and the queen next to me who was bitching, there was this woman who was like, this woman was loudly just complaining before the show started. She goes, "You know, it's really disappointing when you buy tickets months in advance and Bette Midler doesn't even have the decency to show up." And this queen turns around and was like, "Ma'am,
it has been
announced for months that the Tuesday night performances are Donna Murphy. You are getting ready to be in the hands of a 2-time Tony winner.
Yes,
she's
she
a genius.
Oh, my God.
And you're not allowed to be mad at Bette Midler or Donna Murphy
and
for this moment."
And if that queen is listening, we'd love to have
and
you.
And I loved him. I was like, thank you. Okay. I think of the three, I would like to see Diane Wiest as Hella Dolly.
Oh, my God. That's what I was hoping
you would
say.
Because I think it would be so interesting.
Yeah.
Because I think Carol Burnett would be the most obvious choice.
Yeah.
But I don't know that she'd really, really want to do it. And I also feel like there's something about Dolly that I really like. What Donna Murphy brought a level of realness to it, because it's such a daffy, I'll say it, kind of stupid show that you're like, when I want to believe that woman's real.
Right.
And not that Bernadette and Betty Buckley weren't great, but it was like, I just felt like there was I was like, oh, you need to believe this woman because she's such an insane cartoon character. And so Diane Wiest, that would be really interesting.
Yeah. The level of vulnerability.
And then I guess I would have to say, oh God, that's so hard. I'd have to say I'd rather see Carol Burnett in concert because I haven't. Mm-hmm. And I've seen Glenn before. But you're going to make me kill Glenn Close with, and she doesn't have an Oscar.
Well,
but,
you know.
Oh, my
God. She can get a posthumous.
Right. Maybe then she'll finally get an Oscar.
I mean, reason I picked Glenn for the last part is because she's like, delighted me so much that I don't ever need to see more from Glenn Close.
And also, Carol Burnett's voice, I mean, I've always loved her. Annie was obviously, like, the movie musical in my childhood. But, I mean, Daniel has introduced me to some of Carol's, her albums.
Oh,
where,
yeah.
Like, it's like she's doing that Karen Carpenter song, For All We Know, singing better than Karen Carpenter.
She's incredible voice.
Hell?
Yeah.
Also,
this,
she's such a good actress. So, I mean, Annie, that performance is
everything.
Genius.
Oh,
and
brilliant.
She, you know, I just... what an interesting, like, an evening with her from, you know, just stories at a piano, singing, tell us the stories. I also just, I felt like Carol Burnett was like an aunt or a grandmother, since I was, so I just would be so, like, enwrapped.
So in your wisdom, because I know that your soul is deep and rich, help me get over this, because I've loved Carol Burnett forever. And I don't know why, I don't know if you guys remember, this thing happened like 13 years ago where she was pissed about something on Family Guy. And I remember being like,
I remember vaguely hearing about that.
She's not cool. She doesn't support Family Guy. She needs to get over it. And
I have this
was I too loud?
Oh, no,
we gotta let him go. It's 6:29, so the wisdom has to be short. I know you're gonna leave, but
I don't remember what that was. I do think.
But is she a bitch and should I hate her?
No. I've heard nothing like that. I've heard only lovely stories from people who really do know her and have worked with her and just say that she's just truly wonderful.
Sure.
I do think that, you know, she's probably at a certain point, you know, you're that sensitive clown, you know what I mean? You're crying a lot. She seems very real, authentic. Oh, I don't remember what the joke was. I want to say it was something about cleaning up in a porn theater. Why am I thinking
yes,
that?
Like
was
it
that
was,
it?
They brought in the Carol Burnett show sort of
cartoon.
Oh,
that's exactly
with the
what it was.
And
exactly.
The mop.
Of course. Yeah, that's it.
Right, because a porn theater.
The porn theater.
The
floor. Right. Yeah. I know. I think she also, it just feels like, I don't know, she just might not find that sophisticated. I don't know.
Well, she also talks, I mean, I don't know.
She's not dirty at all.
I mean, there's
a
generational thing. Yes. That was how I tried to rationalize
it. But she also talks a lot about the state of TV and how, like, you know, nowadays there's not the freedom to kind of take risks like there was back in the day.
Right.
Like she was given. And then, anyway, I read an article or something about that. That was.
Although, I mean, like, I don't know. It seems like there is a lot of. I mean, I feel like TV is so great and so.
There is a lot more opportunities now. But she really was a pioneer.
Yeah.
But she also, like, knows, like, I mean, it's funny when I asked him an interview and she's like, I love Kate McKinnon and A.D. Bryant. And I'm like, I love that you know who are now.
Yeah.
Like, it would be so easy for her to be like, I'm Carol Burnett and I do not care.
Right.
You know, but I, you know, that's what I say to people when I order my coffee.
Well, I'm sure.
I walk in and I say, I'm Carol Burnett and I do not care.
I'm sure that
double
when
Americano.
When you're a 90-year-old legend, I'm sure you will know the names of the little twinks on SNL.
I hope so.
I hope I live long enough to enjoy
all of it.
So what are the dates for Happy
We start
Doug?
Previews on Thursday, February 6th through March 1st at Soho Playhouse.
Mm-hmm.
All the info is on happybirthdaydoug.com.
Great.
Mm-hmm. And, so please come join us you know, for the month of February. Come say hi.
We will be there Saturday.
We'll have seen it, so we'll be talking it up in our introduction.
Yes, hooray.
We'll do a whole intro. We love everything you do. You're
Thank
the
you.
Most
we
really
love
nice.
You, this was so Thank much you. Fun. I love doing this.
We'll have to have you back.
Yay,
when you
please.
Do your next
I
show.
I love it. I love it.
Mwah.
Mwah.
Thanks for listening to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. For more episodes, visit Broadway World, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts do be.
Come back next week for our chat with two-time Tony-nominated Broadway star Allison Frazier, coming in to talk about a list of so many albums, Ben threw it out and talked about her album New York Romance instead.
Well, that's my broken record. Other upcoming guests include Nathan Lee Graham, Gideon Glick, and ding, 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 ding. Betty Buckley.
This episode was edited by me, Daniel Nolan.
Thanks to Emmy-winning composer and lyricist Lance Horn for the Broken Records theme song.
Follow us both, Ben Rimmelauer and Daniel Nolan, on all y'all's socials.
That's Ben Rimmelauer. BenRimmelauer.
And that's Nolan with an E, not Nolan with an A.
Because Nolan with an A isn't it.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.